listening to Sherpa Legends, a presentation of the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast.
Gentlemen and children of all ages, welcome to
Sherpa Legends. These are conversations with youth ministry men and women who have achieved legendary status. Hey everybody, welcome to our new show. This is Steve Anderson.
And I'm Matthew McCabe.
We are part of the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast, and we have been doing our best over the past year or so to help youth workers to keep going.
And we had this idea for something new. And so,
yeah,
Youth Ministry Legends was born.
One of the cool things about starting this podcast is all the great people that we've gotten a chance to know. You know, we've connected with people on social media. We went to a couple of conferences.
Yeah, and we got to just meet some people. And more importantly, just hear their story.
Yeah.
And their story is just so encouraging of like how they got into student ministry, why they've stayed in it.
So we kind of found ourselves in this youth ministry world in a place we'd never been before outside of our circle of influence in Maryland. And it's been really cool getting to know a bunch of different people. So we got this idea last fall of having a new show where we interviewed some of the all-time great youth workers that everybody knows and loves.
But instead of asking them how to run a student leadership team or a missions trip or how to program a junior high, we just wanted to hear about them, about their story and how God moved in their life, them into ministry, and how he's kept them in it for a long time.
And that's how we got this idea of Sherpa Legends.
And so here we are with our very first Sherpa Legend. Sherpa legend is Heather Flees. Heather is the junior high pastor at Wooddale Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. She has been there for 22 years as the junior high pastor. She's an avid sports fan and a diehard Vikings fan, a sin I have chosen to overlook for the unity of the body. Go Pack, go.
You're so gracious.
I try.
So we met Heather out at the Download Youth Ministry Conference back in September. And the way the conference worked was they brought in many legends, legendary type figures in youth ministry to be the small group leaders for the conference.
Which was such a cool idea.
And they introduced them all individually to walk out music. And Heather,
She stole the show.
Yeah. So when she was being introduced, I was thinking, man, I hope I get in her group. And sure enough, I did.
The Lord is good to you,
yes,
Steve.
Yes, and it was so fun. She was a great small group leader, really relational with all of us, and made us feel like $1 million. And it was great to get to know her. She is a dynamic person.
100%.
Huge personality. A lot of fun, a lot of laughter. She's a strong woman. She will tell you that. And as part of her small group, she was so kind. She gave me an award.
What was the award, Steve?
It was the... Oh, it's up on my shelf. I think it's Gently Kicking Our Asses.
I think that was what it was called,
which is perfect for Heather. That sounds like something that she would say.
Yeah. What makes her legendary, Steve?
She's legendary because 22 years at one church.
That's impressive
fantastic.
Alone.
She's 22 years in junior high ministry.
That's incredibly impressive.
Wow. And then she's really a pioneer, I think, for women in youth ministry. She's just one of those people that everyone loves, and she's kind of been an encouragement to a lot of women over the years to get into youth ministry, use your gifts, celebrate them, and stick with it.
Absolutely. And what a wonderful conversation we had with Heather.
Yeah. So without any further ado, here is our interview, our first ever conversation with the youth ministry legend, Heather Flees. Hey, Heather, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, guys. It's good to be here.
We're so excited that you are the first to be brave enough and kind enough to join us on Youth Ministry Sherpa as our new endeavor here with Sherpa Legends. So thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, you're welcome. I feel like I'm a little different than you boys. My hair takes up a whole lot more of the square than yours, Steve.
Oh, wow.
And Matt, you're that's right in the middle.
Yeah, I'm kind of bridging the gap between. Yeah.
Shots are fired early. That's okay. We like it. Well, we got to meet you out at DYM 200 last month. And mm-hmm. Heather, I think I told you this in person, but when they were assigning the small group leaders, I was sitting there silently hoping that we'd get you.
Oh, wow.
Especially cool. After your introduction.
Despite my introduction
no,
as early.
No, because of the introduction. Come on, it was classic. Awesome.
I need to explain, okay?
Sure.
So I'll let people know that we were told we would get a walk-up song, you know, similar to baseball players who come up to bat, which I thought was just brilliant. Such a fun idea.
Right.
So I submitted two different requests, which I thought were both strong. One being To Hell with the Devil by Stryper, because I graduated in 1991. And okay. Come on. And the other was Legs by ZZ Top, because I love muscles, I love legs, I love specifically my calf muscles, and I love other people's calf muscles. So, well, didn't realize Greg Steer was going to be at the event, and that Greg Steer chose To Hell with the Devil, and how can you argue that Greg Steer shouldn't have that song?
Right, that's right.
We had to go with my backup, Legs. Okay. And they had everybody going out, and they had this announcer that was like from Hollywood that was reading off everyone's bio.
Right.
But what's happening is the guys in front of me that were being introduced, they started walking out and like dancing, you know, the white man dance, while the bio was being read, and people were laughing, so they couldn't even hear the bio. So back in the little room, I'm saying to everybody, guys, we've got to let them read the bio, and then we've got to come out and dance. And nobody was willing to do it. I was trying to hold one guy's arm, and he wouldn't do it. So I'm like, I'm doing it. So I wait for the full thing to be read, right? And then they crank, She's Got Legs, and she knows how to use them. And yep. I felt moved by the spirit. I don't know what else to say.
Was that like, a spirit?
I feel like you guys should better explain it, but maybe it would be offensive if you did. I don't know.
No, someone said you had to be there. And if you were, it's just in your memory forever.
That's a good way to say it.
In a good way.
And truthfully, you know, if Doug Franklin had come out the Legs, it would have been just really weird. So we're glad it was you.
Oh, well, and I was glad to be chosen.
I do think it's interesting that in that setting, two different people chose To Hell with the Devil by Stryper. That to me is
right?
Not be lost in this conversation.
I know. I would agree with you.
A buried treasure there back there, the yellow and black pack of Stryper.
Matthew, what year did you graduate high school?
1987.
Okay. Steve? 1983. 83, come on. Wow, it's not often I'm the young one in ministry anymore.
Well, I lived through the Stryper days and the White Cross days and the exciting
altar
stuff.
Altar boys.
Oh my goodness. The Garland Key.
Michael W. Smith and Amy Grant ruled everything.
Yes, they were went like to that concert. Yeah,
the king and queen of Christian music.
Yeah,
yeah, they're good times.
Broken heart. Whoa, man.
Things just aren't like they used to be. Now everything's worship music, you know.
But then that's where we met, and I'm impressed that you wanted me to be a part of your group, even though I came out strutting my legs.
All good. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So you have the rare privilege of having been at the same church for a long time, mm-hmm. which is pretty awesome. So we'd really love to hear your story about how you got called into ministry and, you know, what God put on your heart to want to do this crazy thing for all these years.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, man, I'd love to tell you. And then I just love it maybe if you ask questions along the way.
Sure.
Because that helps me too.
Yep.
And by the way, guys, let's just be real. I'm trying to figure out how to shut off my notifications as they're coming in. But when I try to shut off the volume, it shuts you off.
Yeah.
So, is that what that is? Okay.
Makes it a more authentic conversation. It's all good.
And you'll know how popular I am with how many people.
Maybe when you get a good point, it'll ding.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll try to match it.
Okay.
I am so thankful that my mom and dad love Jesus. Actually, my dad loved Jesus so much that when he took my mom out, who is not yet a Christian, when on their first date, he said, "Sandy, if Jesus isn't the most important thing to you, then we can't be together, because he's the most important thing to me." And my mom came from a single parent home, you know, back in the 40s, her dad left them when she was in second grade. It was just unheard of at the time. Mm-hmm. And her mom worked three jobs and she was the oldest and raised her brothers. And it just such a not Christ-centered life. And so it's just beautiful how the Lord brought her to himself. And they were married, and I am the sixth child in the family, the baby of six. So 0 to 14. My dad was a long distance truck driver. He drove an 18-wheeler cross country for all of my life, for 37 years.
Wow.
And so when you think about my family, I mean, my dad was gone 6 days out of the week. So he would leave Sunday after the Vikings game, very important.
Very important.
And then he would come back on Saturday. And I'm not exaggerating. Wow. And so at the time, we lived 7 miles out in the country, six children under the age of 14. And my dad was gone 6 days out of the week with no option for cell phone. I mean, he made collect calls from rest areas and truck stops once a night after 9 o'clock. So it was cheaper. Wow. I mean, it really, when I think about it, it's absolutely insane. Yeah.
Years.
She was a single parent. And then, you know, because when he came home, he was fixing cars. He was fixing the washer. I mean, it wasn't like they were going on date night, you know.
No, things were stacking up while I was gone. Sure.
Yeah. So the fun part is when I was five, I started going with my dad in the truck. So my mom says that she was bawling the day she put me up into the Mack truck, but that the Lord said, you know, that's his daughter too. And she was really convicted by that. And so let me go. And I'll tell you, it was some of the sweetest time in my life, even to this day. When you're six kids in a family, to have alone time with your parent for that long. And my dad was an extreme extrovert like me, which is so interesting on the road, being by himself so much. So for him to have a companion, it was like the light of his life. And so I started when I was five, and I took my last trip when I was 33 on my pastoral sabbatical. My church, this is part of the reason why I am where I am for so long, but they paid for me to go with my dad to 3 days of NASCAR races at Atlanta Motor Speedway, paid for the hotel and the rental car and the tickets.
Wow.
And it was just glorious. And we didn't know then, but the cancer was probably in his body at that time. Mm. And he died 2 years later. So I knew it was sweet when I was on that trip that week, but I think the Lord really allowed that to be a special time that I could hold on to. So anyway, but I grew up in a wonderful Christian home, but a pretty strict Baptist home.
Okay.
So we went to a Baptist church that was near us, and I loved church and I loved everything Jesus. I committed my life to him when I was five. And I'm the kind of person that I'm very faithful in my nature. I'm not skeptical. I'm very loyal. And so I will tell you that I've never really had an issue in my faith. I mean, certainly I've shook my hand and fist at the Lord, but I've never turned away and never had significant moments of doubt. And sometimes I feel bad about that, but I'm not going to feel bad about that.
No.
So life was really, really good when I was growing up. I would say that it got tough. My fifth grade year, I transferred from a private school to a public school. So my dad was working his butt off.
Mm-hmm.
Had us in this Christian school, but we just couldn't maintain it, not with that many kids. And so I transferred, but I was totally okay with that because I'm an extreme extrovert. And I was like, oh, new friends.
More friends, more people.
And I will tell you that I was just slaughtered. I mean, there's no other way to say it. I've never been a thin girl, so they automatically went for my weight the first day I was in class at McKinley Elementary School in fifth grade, and started calling me a beached whale and making fun of my development. And they didn't understand the Christian thing, so they started calling me a Jesus freak. And Darren Gowland, literally at my table, took his biology book and started banging it against his head and calling me a Bible banger. And I just had never been treated that way in my whole life. I mean, I'd been in a place where I was celebrated and loved, and I didn't even know what to do with it. And that started a series, I would say, really of about probably 5 years where bullying was a significant part of my life. And I was confused because I knew I was a kind and loving and loyal and faithful girl. And yet they were judging me on things that I just really had no control over, or I had that weren't important. Like, I'm like, wow, I really knew who I was. So even now thinking back, it's confusing to me. But a significant turning point was I went to Trout Lake Camp every summer, and I went the summer after my fifth grade year, and a girl who had kind of been involved in the bullying but went to my church, you know, those are interesting dynamics and layers. She was in my cabin with me. We were in Sequoia Cabin, and Carla was our 19-year-old counselor. Okay, so she was in college. She had a cabin of 14.
A veteran counselor.
13-year-old girls.
Yeah.
And it changed my life. And I say that, and it might sound dramatic, but it's true. She was the first person in my world outside of my family who looked at me and said, I like you, I celebrate you, and I think you're great. And she, during the middle of the week, we had this water relay down at the beach, and she came to me and she said, I need someone to carry the greased watermelon, and you're my strongest girl. I am in.
Yeah.
And guys, I remember, I'm 45 years old, and I can vividly remember being down at that beach, holding that stupid greased watermelon, lowering my shoulder. And I am a strong girl.
Ready to go.
Those little 12-year-old girls were like, doink, 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 like bowling pins, right? The whole time, Carla, not joking, was running up and down the dock, cheering for me and calling my name. And I remember standing in the courtyard at the end of the week, and I was hugging her, and I was just weeping. I couldn't control myself, and I didn't know why. And then on the bus ride home, I remember thinking to myself, as a 13-year-old girl, someday I want to do that for somebody.
Mm.
And so to think of how the Lord was fashioning my call, it's just incredible to me. And I will tell you that Carla to this day is a dear friend.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's so great. I got a fun award at Bethel Seminary this last month, and I got to invite 10 people to be a part of this dinner. And I invited Carla. And I was able to tell my story. I told about that because it really is pivotal to my story. But interestingly, guys, I didn't know what that looked like.
Right.
Because in my strict Baptist church, the only women I saw that were in ministry were doing vacation Bible school.
Right.
Or Sunday school for the younger kids. Like, even the Sunday school superintendent that rang the bell to tell us when we should switch classes was a man with a big tie. And, you know,
wow, there was a bell. That sounds intense.
Bethel Baptist Church was pretty intense.
Oh, wow.
And even at the
Did
time.
Did he have a hunchback too?
No. at the time, my oldest brother, who's 14 years older, was attending Bethel Seminary to become a pastor. And, you know, we were obviously very excited about that. And coming from a truck driver's family, that's so cool. And I had no idea what that would look like. I continued to volunteer at Trout Lake Camp. I remember that the summers I worked there in college, I loved the junior hires. The elementary kids, they kind of annoyed me because it was like babysitting, like wiping their butts. And the high schoolers, they were so dramatic and they had so much baggage. And it was like, you had to chip away to have this little hole to speak into. And then if you messed up at all, it was like,
You
shot the hole and you start all over again.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was 19 at the time and I remember loving junior high. So when I went to Bethel for my undergrad, my plan was to major in communications and be the PR rep for the Minnesota Vikings, to marry an offensive lineman from the team, and to have big babies.
Uh-huh.
So figured if I couldn't play football,
that was my way.
I mean, I was that passionate. That is why I majored in communication.
That's a flawless plan right there, Heather. I gotta be honest with you. It's flawless.
Some people say, really not a defensive lineman? And I think, okay, yeah, there's probably a little bit more muscle on the defensive line than the offensive line. No offense to anybody on the offensive
line. Well, the offensive line guys are smarter, so it was a good
They do have to know more plays, that's for sure. So questions up until this point, because I feel like I've been giving you a ton.
So you had a really strong camp experience, but what was your youth ministry experience like in middle school and high school at Bethel Baptist Church?
Yep. You know, there was a decent amount of transition. I remember the summer going into seventh grade, we had a new church that was being built. And so we met in the junior high and then in a house across the street. And I remember thought that was weird when I would go to school and then I would go to church in the same place, and it felt pretty disjointed. And even like youth pastor wise, there were some breaks in there where there were volunteers that led. And then, you know, the person who came early in my high school years, and I say this with, you know, I don't know, cause I'm, we're all youth pastors now too, but yeah, it was pretty clear that there was an inner circle, and I wasn't in it. And I remember liking being there, loving being with my friends, loving learning about the Lord, but I was frustrated because there was all this stuff that I was involved in. I was a cheerleader. I was in choir. I played softball, and never did my youth pastor engage in any of that with me. The only time he contacted me was if there was a new girl that was going to be there, or if he wanted me to share my testimony, or if he wanted something from me. There was just no genuine interest. And that has really shaped my ministry too. If you ever are in a seminar of mine, you will hear me talk about showing up outside of the walls of the church. And I consistently am at hockey games and, you know, seventh grade orchestra concert. God bless them. I mean, I want to be involved in their lives because I want them to know that I care more about just than they're reading their Bible or that they're showing up. So I would say I don't have bad feelings about church, but I would say as far as formation and gifting and using my gifts, that was all at the camp experience.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I've never had anyone ask me that before, Matthew, but I would say that the youth group experience was a little bit more average.
Okay.
Yeah. You can hear a lot of emotion in your retelling of those stories from junior high.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely played a role in calling on your life.
Yep. It has for sure. And I am disciplined enough to go back there often.
Uh-huh.
So I revisit, whether it's talking with girlfriends or flipping through my eighth grade yearbook.
Wow.
That I keep on my
desk.
On my desk. And I look at it at least once a month. And sure, I'd love to show you a picture of my cheerleading photo.
Mm. That is absolutely amazing.
I'm a base. There's probably no surprise there.
You weren't a flyer?
No, no flyer.
No flyer.
Boys, look at how many girls are supported on my body.
That's incredible.
That's really impressive.
And then I can't go without
showing Atlas there.
The junior high swim team in Minnesota in the middle of January.
Oh my goodness. That's terrible.
I'll put it away. Whenever I'm with my leaders, whenever I'm with my parents, I force them to look back. I force them to tap into the emotion and the feeling that you're talking about, Steve, because I think if you want to be an effective parent or minister, you've got to remember, because we lose it as adults. We lose it. And we start to think, oh, just get new friends. Like, or it's not that big of a deal. There are other fish in the sea. Think of all the stupid things adults say. For a 14, 16-year-old, in that moment, it is the most important reality. And so I do. I tap into it a lot. I look back at pictures. I tell stories. And I feel like kids appreciate it because I can understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, definitely. That's powerful.
So I went into Bethel with that plan. And
so how do you transition from PR rep to the Vikings to middle school youth pastor?
Yeah, right.
You know, well, I actually went into college with a similar plan. I was going to be the play-by-play guy for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Hey.
And so
what does one major in then?
One majors in communications.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow. A couple of communication majors here. Yeah.
I wasn't going to marry a lineman. I was thinking more along the lines of maybe a cheerleader or, I don't know, an actress or a dancer or something like that.
Did you get as far, Steve, as having like an internship? With any kind of a...
Actually, I did. I worked one summer at a TV station in Johnstown.
Yeah, okay.
Did the copywriting and editing and
yeah,
stuff like that, interviews and things like that. So yeah, I was on that path, but It was a lifestyle I didn't think I wanted to pursue in the end, because it would have been it would have been difficult.
No kidding. Now, Joe Buck is a busy man.
Man, I guess so.
Especially in October, right? My word. Him and Chris Fowler. I'm like, do you have wives? I don't know.
Yeah, I would trade with them for a day if I could. I think it'd be fun.
Just to sit next to Troy Aikman, that's the reason.
Yeah. But, you know, I think those communication skills have played out well.
Yes.
In ministry, too, which I see as God's hand in my life.
Yep. And that's definitely part of my story, too. I got onto the Bethel campus and I saw for the first time in my life a woman who was in a pastoral role.
Okay.
So even though Bethel at that time would have been considered a little bit more conservative as well, Sherry was the associate campus pastor and she preached in chapel and she led ministries. And I remember she knew my older brother and sister who had were at Bethel before me. And so she knew me just by them. And I remember seeing her and thinking, wow, that's weird. It was so odd, but nothing clicked at that moment, at that time. But I started to work at Trolley Camp every summer thinking it was just a great job.
Sure.
And then somebody saw me in action, thought I was pretty good at it, recruited me to come and work at their church part-time. So I started when I was 19, I was the youth director at a church plant with 20 kids on a really good night, 6th through 12th grade. I was 19, you guys. I was paid 8 to 10 hours a week. I literally to this day don't know what that means. I don't know if they paid me 10, if they paid me 8. I was at least working 30 hours.
Sure.
Because I loved it. And I was doing
Fridays
and Wednesdays. I was, of course, hanging out with kids because I thought that'd be so fun. There again, I just thought it was such a great job. So in the midst of this, probably my sophomore, junior year, Sherry started calling out gifting in me. My primary spiritual gifts are leadership, teaching, and encouragement. And she started calling those out in me and then giving me opportunity to use those. And then when I was doing my youth ministry stuff, I'd come home on a Wednesday night and my roommates were like, what is your deal? Because I'd like be bouncing off the walls, three primary gifts, which energize you, right? And I would tell Sherry, well, no, here's my plan. Work for the Minnesota Vikings. And she's like, yeah, I get it. But she's like, you're going to go into ministry. And she just kept speaking that into my life along with a guy named Steve and a guy named John. And so it was probably my junior year that I just said, okay, I'm going to do it. And it wasn't like this huge revelation or anything, but all of those things working up to that point, I said, I want to be with students and I want to do it the rest of my life. At the time, the youth ministry major was not strong at Bethel. And so I thought, I'm going to stick with communication because I know that's going to be important. And then I just laid on the youth ministry experience. So any chance I had to lead a retreat or speak or share my testimony, I would do that. So I was at that church for 4 years, graduated from college, and then transitioned to the place where I am now in December of 1996. So I was junior and senior high together for 2 years. We grew and split junior and senior high, and I actually took senior high. They hired another part-time guy for junior high. And so that was a small church. So I thought, okay, I'll come to a big church and I'll do junior high. I've done small church, senior high. And then I'll see which I like the most. And I came in as an associate role, which was, 20 hours during the school year and full-time during the summer. And it was intended to be a 2 or 3 year program. Mm-hmm. And that was 22 years ago. So I wouldn't say that I'm a huge fan of big church, but man, I'm a big fan of junior hires.
Yeah.
The light of my life, the joy of my heart. I get them, they get me. And I don't even have to think about it when I'm with them. It's just like I'm breathing. I love to be with them. So
Who was the senior pastor of the church when you came?
Yeah, so Leith Anderson.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And he's currently the head of the NAE, the National Association of Evangelicals. And he was here 35 years, guys. So he came, I want to say when he was 27 years old. And I had him as my senior pastor for 16 years of being here. And that's an interesting thing too, because within our denomination, there is a wide spectrum of women in ministry, specifically women who can preach or teach. And Leith believes in women in ministry. And I was 23 when I came. I preached for the first time when I was 27, but get this, he's so smart, so wise. We have 5 services, And one weekend he did like a smorgasbord of pastors. So a different pastor preached every service. So it's kind of like pick your pastor.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. And it was actually a great concept, but it was also behind the scenes, this idea of giving us all an experience to preach, yeah. See how we did, see how comfortable we are, how people responded. Well, he put me in the 9:30 service in the great room that's filled with student ministry families and single people. He just set me up to succeed. Before yeah. I even took the stage, I had them. They loved me. They were for me. It's just brilliant. I think back now and I think that's just brilliant. So that was March of 2000. And that's when I started preaching for the first time. And get this, guys, for the first 8 years, I preached only the contemporary services, not the traditional.
Interesting. So,
there again, Leith said, why upset a group of 800 people that probably aren't going to change their minds?
Right.
And I think we both thought maybe things will change, like as far as me endearing myself to them and them to me, especially when I had their grandkids in my program.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened. But it was so interesting because I would preach four services and then a male on staff would preach the 8:30 on Sunday morning.
Which actually is probably a gift to you.
Well, right? I am not a morning person, so that was great. And then, so the first time in 2008, he asked me to preach on the coveted after Christmas weekend.
Oh, yes. That's a great weekend for youth ministers.
Yeah, yeah. I'm already scheduled for December 29 and 30. And I had to arm wrestle to get that. He said, I want you to preach all the services. And I do believe you've endeared yourself to them and them to you. And I think it's the time. And I took it very serious. I went and bought new outfits and I made them sit in the front row and I did a fashion show for them with three different outfits. And I was like, okay, I could calm my hair down a little bit. I was wearing some jewelry. And as a communication major, Steve, I learned in seventh grade speech team, you don't want to do anything with your physical nature that would distract somebody from your message. That's why you don't have flashy nail polish or big earrings. And it was just great because I think they understood I was taking it seriously. And at the end of the fashion show, Leith just said, Heather, I want you to be you. So you wear whatever you're comfortable in. And it wasn't like resolve, like, oh my word, get me out of here. But yeah. It was just really cool that day because I felt so much confidence entering into that pulpit. And so then ever since then, 10 years now, I've been preaching all the services when I preach.
What a gift to have somebody just set you up to succeed and just believe in you and just put you in position to do that. Wow, that's awesome.
Yes, yeah. I know. And I think how many of us don't have that, Matthew, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I fear the numbers that don't.
I know. We're brought into ministry, thrown into the job and like do something, you know, and not only that job, but then given six other responsibilities on top of that. And you only get communicated with when you're in trouble. So I'm really grateful. And it just was so cool after, I'm trying to think of where I was the week after I had that fun ceremony at Bethel Seminary. Of course, I invited Sherry, the associate pastor as well. And a girl came up to me. And she told me that she had seen me speak at a Believe tour. And she said, I never knew. I'd never seen a female before. You're the first one ever.
Wow.
And she was like, now I'm majoring in youth ministry and I want to be a youth pastor. And I just needed to tell you that. And I started crying because like 2 days ago, I had stood up in front of a crowd and told the same story about Sherry.
Yeah.
So to think that now I'm the next generation that's being a physical, tangible idea of the fact that it could be a female is just really humbling and exciting at the same time.
So there's been a pattern in your life of specific people affirming your gifts and kind of calling you out to be who you are.
Yeah.
And that's powerful. Something tells me you're doing the same thing.
It is the core of who I am. So my favorite thing is to look at my students and see what other people can't see, even if it doesn't fit the mold, even if it's not a guy thing or a girl thing, and call it out in them and just say, I like that. I like that in you. And to try to give them space to have the freedom to be that.
Yeah.
I put my ninth graders through a spiritual gift survey during our doctrinal class because I didn't get that spiritual gift survey till I was a sophomore in college. And I'm thinking, if somebody would have looked at me when I was 14 and said, I think you have, you know, here's the gifts that you have, and I want to put you in positions to use those, I mean, how much further would I have been along, and what would my experience in church that really was average have really been like?
Yeah.
If somebody would have done that. So it's really, really fun. Yeah. I love to hug a girl and be like, girl, you're strong. I like that you're strong. And if you ever want to arm wrestle any of these boys in the room, you let me know. We'll bring you up front. We'll make it happen. You know, a boy who's an artist, I have him come up. I remember Charlie came up and during a worship song, like did a painting on stage, you know, and he wanted to be athletic, but he wasn't. And, right. and, but this was his gift, and to celebrate that and to be like, this is a cool thing. Yeah. Steve, you're right. It's what I hope to do to more and more people because it was done to me.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And the power, I just know the power of it. Yeah. Right. And Carla, a 19-year-old who her hair smelled so good. And she tells me to this day it was Suave, which is like 99 cents.
Well, you know, Suave raspberry is actually, you can almost eat it. It's so,
Steve, how do you know that? Because you have no need for it.
Hey. But this is an affirming conversation.
Oh, that's right. My bad.
And it's interesting, you know, people will ask me, tell me about a time you've been discriminated against as a female. Honestly, guys, I can think of one time. I was 22 years old. I was partnering with my brother, who was a youth pastor as well. By the way, out of the six kids, three of us are in full-time ministry out of a truck driver family. And we went up north, way up north of Minnesota to this guy's farm, and we were going to do work for him and live there. He's like 75 years old. So we get there that day, and we're in the barn having a conversation, and I'm asking him some questions. Every question, he looked at my brother and answered the question that I had asked.
Oh,
and I
was
trying to is he not figuring it out? And to this day, it's the only time I can think of.
Wow.
And I mean, I give that guy so many passes, you know, I mean, for heaven's sake, that would have been weird and different. But here's why I can't give you another story. It's not because I haven't been discriminated against. I am certain there are plenty of times I had been, but I don't walk into a room looking to be discriminated against.
Yeah.
So I don't walk in with a chip on my shoulder. I don't walk in thinking these people don't think I should be here. It's actually the opposite. I walk in knowing that God has gifted me and that I'm in my sweet spot and I'm doing what he called me to do. I remember being in a youth ministry meeting one time and I had to leave a little early, and it wasn't until I was driving away that I was like, there were 17 guys in that room and me. Like, I literally didn't even realize it till I was driving away. And I think how many girls would have been sitting in there and looking at the guys and thinking, do any of them think I shouldn't be here? And then one guy looks at her weird, right? Because he had Taco Bell the night before and he's about to crap his pants. But she thinks it's because he doesn't think that she belongs at the table. So right. Yeah. Whenever I have the chance to talk with young women, I say, don't go in looking for it because you'll find it. And right. I think we all know people, no matter what the issue is, they go in with a chip on their shoulder and they find it.
Yeah.
I just know I've come to the place, you know, I'm 45 now. So I've come to the place where I just know there's one person I need to answer to as far as how I'm using my gifts, and that's the Lord. And yeah. It is not my job to convince you that I should be doing what I'm doing. It's my job to use my gifts for his glory, and they are not to make Rice Krispie bars for Vacation Bible School.
At DYM, when you were giving your story, you talked about how you've been offered other opportunities, including some that seemingly maybe had more status or seemed like to everybody else would seem like a promotion.
Yeah.
But you saw it as, no, I am doing what God's called me to do. And that's the highest calling that I can have.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit. I think that was a really powerful point.
Yeah. Man, once I started full-time ministry, which would have been in September of 98 when I came on full-time here and didn't have to work multiple jobs. The year I came here, guys, I had six W-2 forms. And I think I made like $14,000 collectively in the year. So the first year that they were willing to pay me one salary and benefits, and I just got to do this, I was like, yes, I am.
Is this real? Is this real?
Right? I am in. So I knew this is what I wanted to do. And because not only am I loyal and I'm faithful, but I'm very consistent and steady, and I like to be that for people in my nature, I thought, this is what I want to do. This is not going to be a stepping stone for me. But interestingly, having been here 22 years as the junior high pastor, I am on my ninth senior high pastor. I'm on my ninth person that is, has been the point person for senior high. And so within that, I remember starting to think, is this like not good that I have no other desire except to do what I'm doing? Like, I don't want a church plant. I don't want to be a campus pastor. I wrestled with it for a little bit. I did. And I will tell you that every person that I watched was male. And so I thought, is this a guy-girl thing? Is this a temperament thing? And I really don't know. To this day, I can't answer you on that. But I can tell you that I believe I was knit together in my mother's womb to do what I'm doing. I mean, my strengths finders, you guys, are communication, woo, positivity, developer, and activator, and then includer goes in and out. So if you think about that gifting and you think about a 13-year-old girl, right? I can communicate my love for her. I can make her feel like she is one of mine. I can call out every positive thing. I can see little increments of development in her and be like, so great. I can be positive in her life, like all of those things. And it's just naturally coming out of who I am.
Yeah.
I came to a place where I just said, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it really well. So I would say probably the biggest opportunity has been like student ministry pastor roles. And I do love my gift of leadership and I do love to work with the team, but what fuels me is relationships with students. Uh-huh. And I know just from little things that have happened here and committees that I've had to be on, that it pulls me away further and further from kids, yeah, which is what gives me life.
Yeah.
Friends I know in that position, they're not teaching as much. They're certainly not going to seventh grade orchestra concerts, right? They're writing policy manuals and they're on other committees. Yeah. That is not life-giving to me. Mm-hmm. And so I have just said no, and I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, that's so powerful. That's powerful to just know yourself and your gift and your passion so well to, again, pass over what in the world's eyes or other people's eyes might be considered status or promotions or whatever, like Steve said, to say, no, this is what I'm supposed to do. That's very powerful.
And I know you guys are big into longevity. Like my family's here, the leaders here, the people in the community. You know, tomorrow I get to go speak at Central Middle School. I'll spend the whole day teaching in their health classes on abstinence. One of my favorite topics is to talk about sex or the lack thereof with students. And so, but I'll get to be in their lunchroom. I'll get to see 150 students, but I've been doing that now for, I think, like 19 years. So principals know me, teachers know me. So there is such a gift of longevity.
Yeah. You have so much cash in the community and just relationship. Yeah.
Junior high has a face that I'll have kids say, you know, ever since this time, I've been looking forward to being with you. Or parents will say, will you sign contracts? My daughter's in second grade. Will you sign a contract? You'll be here when she's in seventh. And because there's someone and someone consistent versus so many of our churches, right? It's a revolving door. And you never know who's going to be there. I don't know about you guys, but I see so many youth ministers who leave after like year two or three. I will tell you that it wasn't really until year six that I felt like I've got this. Like I've got my own team. I know these families. They trust me. I trust them. I've got my thing. And I think, wow, those youth ministers never experience that. And no wonder they keep moving from place to place.
Yeah.
Do you ever get a sense of condescension or people kind of discounting what you do as middle school pastor?
Well, most people just don't know that such a thing exists.
That's true.
So, I'll typically start if I'm out
in the community. That's a job?
Yeah, right? Is that part-time? I'll start by saying that I'm one of the pastors at Wooddale. Uh-huh. And then I'll say, you know, every one of us does things like funerals and weddings, but then we all have an area of focus and my focus is junior high.
Yeah.
And so mostly it's just surprise that that's a thing.
Sure.
And other times it's just the, you know, oh, bless your heart. You're that's stupid.
Such a Midwest thing. Bless your heart. Yeah.
But I think most of it is, guys, because nobody wants that job. Nobody can imagine. They're scared of teenagers. They're already struggling with their own teenagers. So the thought of having, you know, 80 of them is just crazy to them. Yeah. But no, not really. It's more a surprise that it's a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you've talked a lot about like your strengths and your gifts and the things that you're just wired to do. And so they come naturally. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to work at it. They're just there. What are some things in youth ministry over the years that are just flat out work for you? Like you're not naturally good at it. So when it's come time to do this part of the ministry, you got to strap the boots on and say, all right, let's go to work because I got to get through this. Yep. What are those things for you?
Number one, budget. I went to Bethel and said, tell me the one math class I have to take so I never have to take one again. I took creative problem solving during J term. It was a group project class.
Wow.
I hated it and I never looked back. I mean, my head just, I still to this day, I can't tell you if parentheses on a budget sheet are good or bad. I don't know. Black, red, I think black is good, but I'm not quite sure. It hurt my head. I don't like it. The only thing that fuels me is I know that those funds then go to fund, right? What we love to do with students. Sure. But it is hard for me. Thankfully, I have a husband who was a double math and computer science major and is a master at Excel spreadsheets. So we do budgets together. I am very organized, but I am not administratively driven.
Uh-huh.
So charts and Excel spreadsheets. I mean, honestly, I try. Like I try to put the lines in and like the lines on all of the borders and I can't. So I'm a big fan of the body of Christ and 1 Corinthians 12:18 that says that God placed every person in the body just as they're supposed to be.
Yes.
And I have found Kathy, Rick, and Chad. And they are the ones who uphold me because they are naturally gifted. It's like breathing to them to make an Excel spreadsheet look great.
Yeah.
I have this doctrinal class and Kathy runs my grade book and she puts in these formulas and not just for the grade book, but like for the seating chart. She has some kind of a formula in Excel that says where they sit and like.
Oh, wow.
Wow. She's gold.
No idea. Yep. Gold is right. So, and then I would say probably like just the calendar process. Writing was my minor and I love to write. So like writing the description isn't a big deal, but sitting down and like putting down the RSVP dates and what rooms do you need? And do you need any media squares? And I feel just like the other stuff is breathing. I feel like it sucks life out of me. Yeah. Yeah. And I just have to say, once this is done, Heather, then you can hang out with kids. Once this is done and this is on your wall, then you get to play and hang out with kids and love them and minister to them. And that's really what pulls me through. So I would say the budget and the administrative stuff is the biggest thing. And then I really don't like meetings, especially ones that are every week and sometimes you're not sure why you're meeting.
Yeah. Are there people who like meetings? I mean, there must be.
I think there are. Oh, there have to be.
Because I don't either.
I love to end meetings early. I love to bring fun snacks and candy to meetings to make them more fun.
Yes, food is important to meetings.
When I'm here at the office and I have 4 meetings on a day, which means that my emails are piling up and I'm going to have to sit down and do those more, it is really discouraging to me. And then I really suck at golf. I'm not a good golfer. if we're just good in those areas.
All right.
Yeah, he's throwing that out there.
Play with us. He'll fit right in.
Yeah, I was going to say, Steve and I play regularly, and it is an adventure, to say the least.
Clubs have been thrown, Heather. Clubs have been thrown.
Yeah, we both believe we can be good, but we both also know deep down that we can't be.
Do you then lower yourselves to Frisbee golf? And is that your deal?
No, I can't throw anymore. I've had a couple shoulder surgeries, so that's out.
Yeah. I haven't played Frolf. I believe it's called Frolf in the lingo, right?
Yeah.
I haven't played that in a while, although the new middle school director that we just hired here at the church that I manage, he's a big Frolf fan, so I have a feeling I'll be out there shortly just from a supervisor role kind of thing.
Awesome. Hey, Heather, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So you're a high extrovert. My partner is also a high extrovert. I'm a mild introvert. So I've often wrestled with that in youth ministry.
Yeah.
Being the person who doesn't always want to be with kids. Sometimes I want to be by myself. Mm-hmm. And even at my age and having done this for so long, I still sometimes wrestle with that.
Yeah.
So talk me off the cliff of that. What does that look like for someone to have a different calling in a sense, but still be called youth ministry?
Yeah. Well, just to help you understand just how much of an extrovert I am, showering is my least favorite part of the day. I have to do it by myself. And Chad and I have tried. We have different temperature issues. So, but sometimes I make him sit on the toilet and talk to me. But I am in and out in 7 minutes like that because I hate it. I hate that I'm by myself. So Steve, I would say that you have the ultimate temperament in that you are an introvert that functions well as an extrovert. So think about this. Matthew and I would guess that we're similar. I'm so extroverted that I don't like to be alone. I don't like to be quiet. I don't like to be still. So I have a really hard time with my quiet time with the Lord. Mm-hmm. I love being in Bible studies. I have a really hard time sitting in my bed with my Bible open in front of me. I even have to have like my classical Pandora music station playing because I can't stand the silence.
Right.
We all know people who are so introverted that it's just painful.
Yeah.
Like they literally can't have a conversation, right?
Right.
So Steve, you've got the best because you know you need to energize with time alone. And my guess is your time with the Lord is easier for you, but yet you can function well in spurts, but you've come to know how long your spurt can be,
that's
right?
That's true. Yes.
And you know, okay, if I'm doing this all night or if I'm doing this or if I need to do this, then I've got to have that next night home or I need to take the afternoon off or whatever. And my guess is you've learned how to navigate that and how to manage that.
Yeah.
And I think
that's the word all-nighter.
Oh yeah.
That's a bad word in our podcast. Sorry.
Well, you an all-nighter fan, Heather?
I will tell you that on March 22nd, Wooddale's Junior High will be doing the all-night blitz. We start at 8 p.m. and we end at 7 a.m. And it's a lock out, not a lock in.
Mm. Bless your heart. Bless your heart.
Oh, are you going to have some hot dish? And yeah, you bet. For sure. You bet.
Don't you know, eh?
There goes the Fargo references. But Steve, I love that your kids get to see who God created you to be and you using that. My team is filled with people who aren't like me. I know that I genuinely scare some kids. I do. I try to be a modified Heather. I try to back up a little bit, but I know that I scare some people. My husband, Chad, Greg, Rick, Kathy, these others I'm talking about, they can come alongside of a kid like I can't. And I've seen it happen and it's amazing. I love that. So I would say, Steve, not only is it awareness for yourself and managing that, but then staffing the areas where you're not. Just like I staff people who are chill and quiet, who didn't grow up in Christian homes, right? Who aren't big talkers on the mic. Like I try to get all the things I'm not and bring in people who are, because that's what my kids are. My room is filled with all different kinds of personalities and backgrounds and temperaments and ways they experience God. And I want to show them as many as I can. So the idea of having someone who's different than me and Matthew on the stage, I think is beautiful as long as you're doing the same thing that I'm hoping to do and staff those areas I'm not.
Yeah. Thanks. That's encouraging. Yeah.
I agree with everything she just said, Steve. No, it's knowing yourself. It's knowing that after a retreat on a Monday, we can't record a podcast because you will just be a dud. You'll be like, you just like, it's terrible. Like just, you need to be alone. So it's good. But the day after a retreat, I'm ready to go.
I say, give me a shower and one night's sleep and I'll get on the bus and do it again tomorrow. Yep.
Yeah. I need a week.
So can I ask you guys a question? Is that fair?
Fair enough, absolutely.
Growing up, did you guys see any females officially in ministry? I mean, I know we all saw, you know, maybe principals or women who were strong in our church and that kind of thing, but did you ever see anybody who had a position of leadership that was given by the church to them as a female?
I actually grew up in a mainline church. We had a female associate pastor.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, I didn't have any relationship with her. I didn't particularly think she was that great at her job, actually.
Oh,
she had nothing to do with her gender, but I probably should cut that out.
You want me to ask the question again?
No, he's a good editor.
Okay, and side note there, boys, I am not like an ERA girl at all.
Sure.
But when I go to our fall retreat, every 3-4 years, I'd like the speaker to be a female because like 70% of the audience is female. I don't want an average female. So one year we went up there and it was the wife of a pastor. And, you know, like, but I mean, it's like that's the best they could get. Like, and she was like a fifth grade teacher and she talked mostly about her kid. Like,
yeah.
And I went into the office of the guy and I said, listen, that was not helpful. Like, yeah. I don't want an average girl. Give me a great guy over an average girl any day, because that doesn't help, you know, and not even help the advancement, but even just help kids to grow, help girls to see something that they could be. So I'm bummed that that female associate was not strong, because that kind of defeats the purpose of elevating that women have gifts and should be using them.
Yeah. The church that I went to after I got saved, after my eighth grade year, was a Swedish Covenant church. And they actually had a husband and wife who were co-pastors together. And I thought she was better than him. I mean, he was fine, but she was a better teacher than he was. And she's the one that called out the gifting in me of teaching. Yeah. As a sophomore in high school, had me teach in front of evening church, because we didn't want, you know, give the sophomore guy the morning church. You know, you can talk to the 85 people that show up on Sunday night, whose average age is 63. But he was there. But she called it out into me, and she worked with me to write my first message, which was terrible, not because of her, but because I was a sophomore in high school, and it was not great.
Wow, interesting. Swedish Covenant.
Yeah, okay. I didn't even know it existed, but that's my, my friend who invited me to camp where I accepted the Lord, he, that's where he went, so that's where I ended up.
I have a young woman on my staff right now that we hired a couple years ago, a former student, and I mean, she's fantastic. And I can't
imagine. I know her. She's phenomenal.
I can't imagine not having her on the staff. She's just killing it. So I want her to stay with this. You know, this is her calling. I want her to stay in this for a while.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? And I just, it's so important for kids to see both male and female. And so no matter what your gender is, you've got to have your match, right? So I recently had my associate position open, and people were saying, well, would you be open to a female? And I just, here I am, a female. And I just kept saying no, because I want a different voice, literally and figuratively. I want a different voice on the stage. I want kids to look up and see someone who's like them. And it was really important to me to have a guy.
Yeah.
Not to handle the, you know, masturbation and pornography issues. I can handle those. But to be somebody who looks like half the crowd. Matthew, do you have, this is time for accountability. Do you have a female in your group that you have raised up to be a leader that is strong that your girls can see?
I mean, not currently. I mean, we have some key volunteers. A student that was in my ministry when I was in Wisconsin, she went off and did missions for a few years, and then I actually hired her. She was our middle school director for 7 years here and was amazing. Absolutely did a great job. She, you know, met a guy and got married and had to move away because he was somewhere else. And so, you know, I don't fault her for that. That was a good thing, but she did a great job leading our middle school, and I loved it here for sure.
Well, and it doesn't have to be a paid position. Somebody in your ministry that could be kind of your counterpart, because sometimes there are conversations that a girl really should be having at summer camp and not you as the guy, or vice versa.
We recruit volunteers based on making sure we've got those people in place, for sure.
Hey, last question for you, Heather.
Okay.
22 years at one church. There had to be times where you thought, I can't do this anymore, or you thought about doing something else, or you were discouraged. How did you persevere through those times, and how did you make it to 22 years?
I would say that the hardest point was when we changed senior pastors. So come back to what's at my core: consistency, steadiness, loyalty. I am a ESFJ, strong on the J, and Leith, the guy who was here for 35 years, very J. And his executive pastor, my boss, very J. So everything was planned. So Leith would go away in July, he'd come back, and on August 1st, we would have literally the entire schedule for the following year, January to December. Every baby dedication, every baptism, every board of elder meeting, every sermon series, everything. You could plan your life by it. And it wouldn't change. It wouldn't change. Dale, our senior pastor, who's been here 5 years now, is just built in a different way. He's an ideator. So he's just throwing up constant ideas. He's a shoot from the hip. He's led by the Spirit. And all of those things are awesome. I validate those. But when you know one way and you feel like you're made one way, guys, it just, it felt so chaotic. If I'm honest, it felt disrespectful. And I just thought, I don't know if I can do this. In the meeting one time, he said, Leith and Ken had a groove and they fit very well in that groove. And he said, I run in a different groove. It's honest and it makes sense. And all we've been talking about gifting, that's legit.
Sure.
But when he went around to say, you know, how are you feeling now? I just said, I worked very well in that groove. You know, I worked very well in their groove, and this is harder for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even just saying it, it sounds a little whiny, but I like to say I want a foundation to dance on. Mm. Like, I love to be crazy and wild, but I need to know what is and what isn't. I need to know what's expected. I need to know what's coming. And I just never felt like I didn't feel like I had that base.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so part of me thought, if this is the way it's going to continue, I don't know if I can function here, because I was really discouraged. I was frustrated. Dale made a really smart move, and he brought in an executive pastor, campus pastor, who added a lot more Jay and a lot more attention to the staff. And I've told him, Kyle is the reason why I stayed. If it would have continued as it was that first year, I don't think I'd be here.
Mm. Okay.
And man, I try. Adaptability is like number 24 on my strengths finders. It's not high. But I tried, you know, I tried to be like, come on, Heather, just adapt. And there are certain things I could go with. And then other things that I was just like, I'd be told there was going to be this thing on a weekend. And then I would say no to a speaking gig on that weekend. And then 2 weekends before it, they would say, oh, we're not going to do that. Mm. And they'd cancel the weekend. Or the other way, it would be on the thing and then they'd cancel it and say, well, we're just going to find another Saturday in September to reschedule it. And I'm like, I was the only one in the room. I'm raising my hand and I'm like, what Saturday in September? Like, are you crazy? So it was just continual things like that, that were such a rub against how I roll, how I work, how I had managed myself, my team and my ministry, that it was really hard. Mm. And then I mean, that's really the only time that I can think of, Steve.
You ever get asked how much longer you're going to do this?
Yeah.
I get asked that all the time.
More asked in hope, I think, by people who are here.
I get asked in disbelief.
Yeah. And I would say there's a different expectation for you guys as males. I think there is more of a pressure for you to, when are you going to become a real pastor? When are you going to advance? When are you going to plant a church and all those different things that I kind of said. I think I have less of that because I'm female. I love, 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 love what I do. I will tell you that last time we did the all-night blitz, I was driving one of the buses because I have my CDL bus license. And I was standing at the bowling alley at 5:30 in the morning and I was waiting for my turn to bowl. And literally my body just ached. Like not a headache, not tired. Like I was like, my fifth lumbar, I think, just went out. Like my whole lower back was just like throbbing. Yeah. Because I think my body was like, we're not usually doing this at this time. What is going on?
Yeah.
So there are times, you know, where I can tell I'm older. My left knee is cranky. And so when we were doing this grease to steal the whatever at summer camp, I went in and tried to grab the blow up whale. And I went down on my left knee and I couldn't get back up. And I was like, crap, I hate that.
Right.
But as far as like relevancy, as far as feeling able to connect with kids, feeling like I know what I'm doing, I'm still there for sure.
Yeah. And absolutely. You can still watch Greg Steer in arm wrestling too.
I want it to be noted that he told me after that I am the strongest woman he has ever known, and he has bodybuilders in his family.
Yeah.
So that helped.
That's high praise.
That little boy packs a punch. Holy smokes. Yeah, he probably has like 5% body fat. It was amazing how strong he was in his core, like not just his bicep, but his core.
Man. You held your own. We were proud of you.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Awesome. I'm so honored to be a guest for such an extended period of time.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you for your time. I mean, that was very kind of you to give a couple of noodles from the East Coast, your time on a day where you probably have emails stacking up.
On a Wednesday. So it's our program night. So I get to hang out with the students tonight. So
good day. It's Halloween too. So do your best to scare them.
Yes. I've got my orange on. I'm ready to go. We have $120 worth of candy. So we should be good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Heather, cool. We love you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for inviting me.
Such a big personality. It's a little bit like drinking from a fire hose, but in the best way possible.
So fun. So thank you, Heather, for giving us the time and spending that time with us, having that conversation. We loved every minute of it. So what'd you take from that conversation?
Oh, man, there's so much to take. I thinking about the fact that she wanted to marry a Vikings offensive lineman, that's just the coolest thing ever. I'm sorry that didn't work out for her, but God had a better plan for her.
Yeah.
Probably the biggest thing I took out of it, you know, is her talking about the importance of, you know, that pioneering women in youth ministry, mm-hmm. and seeing women in significant leadership roles. And so when she sort of turned the interview on us instead right. of us interviewing you, she's like, all right, let's be accountable. What right. what do you have in your ministry context? What kind of women do you have in significant leadership roles? And what kind of women are you developing to serve in those roles? I was challenged by that in a really good way. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I agree. And I hope that the women listening to this podcast are really encouraged by that, because she is a standard bearer for that. And she does it with such a grace and humility. It's not, you know, she's not carrying a flag. She's just doing what God has called her to do.
Championing.
And yeah. and demonstrating how incredibly gifted God has made her to continue on doing junior high ministry for so long. So it's awesome.
Absolutely.
Another thing I really took from the conversation was just be yourself. She's a unique individual. She's high energy. You know, anybody who walks out at a youth ministry conference to Legs by ZZ Top is a unique personality.
Absolutely.
Who arm wrestles Greg Steer on stage in front of 200 youth workers. That's a cool personality. She just says, be yourself. She's high extrovert, dynamic, and yet she was really affirming to me, you know, that conversation about how I'm more introverted and just be yourself. Whatever you bring to the table as a youth worker is what God wants to celebrate and use, which is really encouraging.
Yeah, and even that talk she gave at the DYM conference, and then mm-hmm. even in the interview it comes through that, just be comfortable with who God mm-hmm. made you to be and just live into it, because that's the best you can be.
Yeah. And that legendary status that she's achieved by being in one place for 22 years doing junior high youth ministry. She is the face of junior high ministry in her community, which is a tremendous honor and something that she has very much earned and deserves.
Yeah, and I'm sure worked very hard to get.
Right.
To be the face of junior high ministry, not just in your church, but in your community. That's a big deal.
Yep.
That's legend.
Yep.
We've got more interviews lined up in the future. We've got some great people lined up. You should be super excited about the stories you're going to get to hear through this new series, Triple Legends.
Next month, we have a conversation with the legendary youth speaker, Greg Speck. He has spoken to tens, if not hundreds of thousands of teenagers around the world for the past 30-plus years and has an incredible load of wisdom to deliver to us, and I'm really looking forward to sharing that conversation with you, our listeners.
That's it for today's episode, but we'll have more coming in the future. And as Youth Ministry Sherpas would say, keep going.
And one day you too can achieve legendary status in youth ministry.
See you next month.